You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Lions fans, it's time for the podcast you've been waiting for. The show where Kool-Aid runs blue, faces turn red, and rose-colored glasses never go out of style. This is the Detroit Lions Podcast, your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection. And now, two guys who haven't scored since 1958, Chris and Case.
Hey, hi-de-ho, Lions fans. Welcome to the Detroit Podcast, episode 337. This is the official Detroit Lions Podcast for Reddit. I am your otherwise dashing host, Chris, and with me is the studliest man this side of Muskegon, Jeff the Riz Rizden. How you doing, brother?
It's National Beer Day. Cheers.
Oh, man, nice. Why did I pick today to not to be on a clean day? Darn it. I can't time anything right, it seems like.
That's okay.
Got a good show today. We got Kyle Krabs from the Draft Network coming here. We're going to talk draft, talk Lions, talk Miami, NFL, that kind of stuff. Stuff that seems to be relevant these days, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
Lions had a couple of changes at defensive back. We'll get into that. We've also got a conversation about any defenders worthy of number 7 in a trade back. We'll touch on that a little bit. And what can we do with number 7 if it isn't picking a player? We got that, a whole lot more. Great show lined up. Riz, are you ready to go, my man?
Oh, let's do it.
Let's kick this off and break it down.
All right, let's get into it. Let's start off. We've got our guy Kyle coming in just a few minutes. We'll have him kick off with us and get going. But there's a couple topics we want to hit on in the meantime. Riz, I'm going to just put the starting gun right on here. Let's take a look at some of the new DBs in Honolulu Blue. We got Quinton Dunbar and Corn Elder, that's a fun name. I don't know that you can do a whole lot of, I think Corn is already close enough to a nickname that you can't do a lot with.
Yeah. His given name is Cornelius. He goes by Corn. Yep. I don't blame him. Cornelius is a mouthful.
And Corny, you just, right? Remember Corny Lucas? That just didn't seem to.
No. Oh, yeah. I do remember Corny. God, that guy had the longest legs of any human I've ever seen.
They went up to your neck.
They did. They absolutely did. 6'7" and it was all neck. All legs. Yeah. I'm 6'5" and it's all neck.
All right, my friendly giraffe. Let's talk about Corn Elder first. What did we get here?
So,
what do we got?
So we got ourselves a slot cornerback. He started at the slot for Carolina last year. Comes out of the Miami football program. He's been around, I believe he's had 4 years in the league. Solid, unspectacular slot corner, and you want unspectacular from your slot corner. You don't want him to, you don't want to know your slot corner's name, quite honestly, because that means he's doing a really good job. That means that he's tackling. Corn can do that. He can turn and run. The best thing about him, and you saw this when you watched this film in 2020, he can follow a receiver that's running a crossing route and carry them across the field.
Which has been a real
nobody on the team could do that last year. Not a soul. Justin Coleman did it in week one, and then it all went to hell.
And then probably forgot.
So I mean, Elder, he's a limited guy. He's never going to be a Pro Bowler. This is an acquisition where ideally he's competing for the starting slot job, and not just handed it. But right now he is the best slot corner on the roster, and that. You could do a lot worse. They have done a lot worse than Corn Elder. So I'm happy with this was a this was a sort of out of left field signing because he was a guy that didn't really get a lot of attention, excuse me, from around the league, and sort of popped up. And this is kind of the era, the realm of the draft calendar where free agents don't typically sign. You know, right. Most guys are waiting. Richard Sherman, I know, talked about that last night on a podcast. He's like, I'm not signing anywhere now. I want to see who gets drafted where and pick my spot later.
It's both sides kind of in a wait and see right now, right? The team's waiting to see who they get in the draft. The player's waiting to see who, you know, where their best fit is, where they're going to get some time, where they're going to make the money. And so we have this little bit of a pause. And you're right. Korn was out of left field. Now, definitely an upgrade year over year for us.
Yes, at that position. Absolutely. Yeah.
And much needed.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's got a cool name, and that's always fun. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about Quentin Dunbar. Here's a guy we got from the Seahawks, I believe. Yeah. And again, another guy that I really didn't expect to see wearing Honolulu blue. How did this play out?
So his circumstance is a little different. He's coming off of an injury, and I think he wanted to get in somewhere before that. Before teams found their draft options, which sort of makes sense. And you have seen a couple other guys around the league in that sort of realm too. He played, I think it was 5 games, maybe 6 games last year with Seattle. He got hurt in their first game, tried to play through it and couldn't. And if you ask Seattle fans about him, they will tell you they will treat him the way that Lions fans treat Dez Trufant, because he basically had the same year, a veteran who came in with pretty high expectations and flopped miserably. Some of that on Dunbar was the fact that he was hurt. He had a knee problem. In 2019, the guy at Washington, and I'll quote the tweet that I sent to our friend Brandon Kerr, hello, commission. In 2019, he was the best cornerback that the Detroit Lions would have on the roster. Our good friend Eric Schlitt tweeted after that, he was the number 2 ranked cornerback, period, by PFF in the entire league in his last year in Washington, 2019. He was great. That guy is a long-term starter for Detroit. I know they only signed him for 1 year, but that guy is what everybody wants Amani Oruwariye to be, a physical press, turn and run, smother him to the sideline, playmaker. That's Dunbar.
Put the pillow over grandma's head. Let's go. Oh, yeah, no, yeah. For sure. For sure. And the thing is the Seahawks,
we got violent here.
The Seahawks last year, they basically paid him to heal up. And the thought is we've got a guy who now has had time to get healthy, who can return to his old form. And as you said, be a long-term kind of solution. Now, he also fits the mold because he's a 1-year signing that we have going on in Detroit right now with the way that the cap is. A lot of players are waiting for the cap to play out and expand next year to get their money. A lot of 1-year deals. But this is a chance for a guy to show out, to ball out, and maybe to mesh with a culture. If he doesn't, he can move on and make his money somewhere else. But here's one where we're trying each other on, right? We get to see how the fit is and how well we work together. And he's motivated and we're motivated. This is another one of those same kind of stories. I love what this front office is doing in this situation. They're playing the situation as handed to them very, very well.
They are, and this is a reclamation project, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. There is some history with Dunbar and defensive backs close. Easy for me to say. Defensive backs coach Aubrey Pleasant. They were together in Washington for a couple of years. That's where Dunbar was at his best. So if you're thinking, didn't I know that name from somewhere? He was a wide receiver on the Florida football teams that Tease Tabor was on. he didn't make it as a wide receiver his rookie year, but Washington's like, you know what? We like you. Can you play defense? So they kind of stashed him on the practice squad, built him up, and by the middle of his second year, he was playing more than he wasn't playing, and he became a full-time starter after that. There is a lot of injury problems. That's one of the reasons why the Lions were hesitant to commit a long-term to him. He's ended the last 3 seasons on injured reserve, didn't play in 11 games more than 11 games in any of those seasons, all separate injuries, all leg injuries. That's a concern. That's one of the reasons why he was anxious to get in and find a place. Hey man, you want me? Okay. Yeah, I'm in. That explains his motivation for it. So I like it. I would caution fans to not get too excited about it because again, you're dealing with a guy. He hasn't always been the easiest guy to coach. He didn't necessarily fit in well in Washington. Excuse me, with the layer above Pleasant. And he wanted his way out. And he forced the trade. He had an off-season issue that he was accused of and later quickly acquitted of being involved in an armed robbery. But that sort of was kind of a, I don't know, he was in the wrong spot at the wrong time, but he probably knew better than to be in the wrong spot is the story that I got from talking to somebody from Washington about it. It's a hopeful fit. This is one, again, like you said, they're trying it on. And I think they'll realize pretty quickly whether it's going to work or not. And if it doesn't, he won't be there by the beginning of the season. I think they'll make that pretty clear. One of the things that I'm really hopeful that this organization does now that the prior last two regimes didn't do well is that if they make a mistake, they let it go. They don't let it linger on the roster. They don't let it bring the whole thing down.
Right.
That's not something that Quinn Trisha did very well, other than Sylvester Williams, who they realized right away, like, oh my God, this guy's stealing our money.
Let me ask you, let's kind of put it in perspective here. The signings of these two guys, obviously the Lions were a consensus 15 win team. Do they push us to 16 or do they push us down to 14? Or are we sticking with that consensus 15?
I don't think they move the needle a lot. I do expect Elder, though, to be no worse than the number four cornerback this year. Yeah. And that's a role that the Lions needed.
Yep.
Right now, they had Odawarie, Okuda, and Mike Ford. That was your defensive backfield.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was difficult. And we often see cornerback four from the Detroit Lions. I mean, it's unfortunate, but you know, you look at cornerbacks, it's one of the most athletic positions on the field. But gosh, these guys get dinged up. And they have to be athletic to play against these wide receivers. They have to be some amazing athletes at peak performance, top of the form, and they start getting dinged up and they're going to get burnt. So that's why you cycle through them so fast.
We saw that with Okuda last year. He was never healthy. He had that sports hernia, needed the core muscle surgery, and it clearly bothered him. I expect just for that particular purpose that he will be better in year two. I also think that the coaching staff will be better for him and the scheme will be better for him. Have him line up his press and actually allow them to press the receiver. Revolutionary.
Yeah. I really look forward to see what Jeff Okuda can do this year. I'm
excited about it. I liked him a lot coming into the draft. I liked him a lot when they took him. Other than tackling well last year, though, it was really not good.
Yeah, well.
There were a lot of things that weren't good last year. So I expect Elder to help. I'm going to reserve on Dunbar. I'd love for it to work. I'm not going to say that it's going to work until I see it work, though.
Sure.
But I'm happy that they brought him in. It's a positive move to bring him in. Yeah. And again, if it's not working, I have a feeling they'll move on pretty quickly. And I think he would appreciate that, too.
Sure. Yeah. Any other history you might want to talk about with corn really quick before we pop into the next item?
Oh, popcorn. That's a segue right there. My man.
You know, you can't do this business without a specific skill set. Don't try this at home, kids. You could get hurt. That's so terrible.
Corn law.
All right, let's talk. There's something I want to talk about, and I want to be nice, but also I want to be honest. And here's a guy I met him and know him. It's from Senior Bowl. You introduced us, Riz. I know you guys hang out a little bit. He's a nice enough guy, and I say that that's more diminishing actually than I want it to be. He's a nice guy. He was a nice guy, and he was fun to hang out with, awesome to party with. He's a great time talking about Ben Albright, and he happened to have a tweet, and it's one of those things that he gets kind of pinned with. Maybe he pins himself with a little bit. But I want to read this tweet, and I want to get your reaction, because my reaction was negative. I'll be honest. As much as I like the guy, right? But this is kind of his field where he plays a lot. Just got off the phone with someone who told me not to be surprised if Detroit went quarterback at 7 if the right one fell in their lap. That was Chef Curry Sauce that posted that.
Ben, why do you do this to me? So Ben and I go way back. We've been good friends for a long time. I was present with his most famous Senior Bowl story. If you know it, you know it. that was like 2009, 2010. That was a long time ago. Yes. So Ben likes to do that kind of thing. He likes to set that up where, stir the pot a little bit is probably the best way to say it. He's a provocateur, and he's very good at that. And I respect him for that. I don't know who he talked to. I did text him about it. He hasn't texted me back.
A provocateur. That's funny. And I get it. I get what you're saying, right? But that just in itself sounds kind of funny, right?
Yeah. He hasn't texted back with me. So maybe, you know, I don't know. I don't think he's wrong. I can't confirm what Ben said there, but I don't think he's wrong. I also don't know that he's right. That's probably the best way to say it, is that it's ambiguous enough that yes, the answer is yes.
Yes. Yes. Okay. With that, we've got Kyle here. Let me go ahead and bring Kyle into the party here. We'll get everything going. Kyle, there we are.
All right.
Oh, let me change his name. Sorry. Sorry, Kyle. I've got you listed as Luke. That's my bad.
Oh, yeah. We had Luke on last week.
Hey.
There you go.
It's got an L, an E, letters.
Two B's. Got it. How you doing, Kyle? Welcome to the show, man.
Good. How you guys doing?
Rock and
roll. Thanks for joining us, buddy. Yeah.
Yeah. Looking forward to this.
Yeah.
Good.
Look at you with the professional backdrop, my man.
He's got the whole thing, yeah.
We got the glow up going on, you know.
There you go.
Quarantine was good to us in that way. Forced us into uncomfortable spaces and areas of growth.
Awesome.
All right, this is Kyle Krabs of the Draft Network. If we haven't said so, he's joining us today. We're going to talk a little bit about the draft. Kyle has he's the director of scouting over there, so he's got a good broad sense of understanding. Also has a good focus in Miami. You want to talk a little bit about kind of what you do, Kyle, just so folks get a sense? Because you're both broad in your knowledge as well as quite focused in some of the reporting you do, and I just want to give people some insight into that.
Sure. So as far as what my hands are on a day-to-day basis, you mentioned the Draft Network and director of scouting over there, and we have an excellent team of five guys that we work with, myself included. Joe Marino, my co-host of the Draft Dudes podcast. I've been working with him for 5 or 6 years, so we know each other and our takes like the back of our hands. But we also have two former scouts on staff from the league, and Dre Harris, who worked with Kansas City and Arizona and Cleveland, and Brentley Weissman, who spent a little bit of time with the Chargers organization. And then we also have Jordan Reed. And that group of five guys, we divide the country throughout the summer time and the football season itself. And we aim to master our regions. And then collectively, we all come together starting sometime in December, and we start putting final grades on guys. And then we start doing cross checks and presenting the players. And so the Draft Network rankings that you see are really a collaborative effort, and we try and live up to the moniker of football's 33rd front office and treat this process just like a team would.
Nice.
From a Miami perspective, I'm the managing editor of USA Today's Dolphins Wire and also host Locked On Dolphins, so plenty of daily Dolphins content. And Jeff knows about the lifestyle there with the wire sites and keeping your ear to the ground for any interesting topics that you can cook up. So we're very always much like Jeff, like that.
We're always on duty, and it's been fun to get to know you, Kyle, over the years. I remember your first Shrine game; that was a fun time, man.
2014.
Back in time, man. That was the night where we. I don't know if you were still there or not, but we found a certain NFL position coach who was trying to pick up a couple.
Yes. Yes, I was still there for that.
Yes, that was.
I didn't stay for the finish to see how the story ended, but I was there for the beginning of that narrative.
Now, I heard you mention the lifestyle of the the wire sites. This isn't the
not
lifestyle
quite
we're
that
talking
one.
About.
Okay.
Not that lifestyle. No. There's. Yeah. No.
Okay. Just making sure.
Back to football. All right. So I want to ask you, since we'll lean on your Miami-ness for a second here.
Sure.
They traded back. Then they traded back up. What are they doing at 6? And why would they drop from 3 to 12 and then go from 12 to 6? Why not just drop from 3 to 6?
Yeah. Just talk through that whole process, if you would, because I think there's a couple people that aren't as connected on that.
So from my understanding, there were a number of teams that had standing offers with the Dolphins regarding the number 3 overall pick. And it seemed like from the Dolphins perspective, the San Francisco avenue, and they were working kind of in parallel on the side with Howie Roseman and the Philadelphia Eagles, kind of negotiating both trades simultaneously before one was even agreed to. So it tells me that the Dolphins have somebody that they're kind of reading the tea leaves and anticipating that they can get with the number six overall pick. And before the Carolina Panthers moved to land Sam Darnold, I think they had put themselves in positions to potentially be the gatekeeper on the second run on quarterbacks in the top 10. You know, you're expecting 1, 2, and 3. And if Atlanta stays put and drafts Kyle Pitts and Cincinnati takes Penei Sewell or Jamar Chase and Miami says, well, hey, hold on, our top three guys on the board are still on the board here. Carolina's knocking on our door and they're going to offer us even more. You could have entertained that offer, but with Carolina making the move that they did, and Carolina not being so aggressive and all in to jump into three with San Francisco offering multiple ones, I think Miami looked at the opportunity to say, hey, we can move back three spots. We're anticipating we're going to save money on the rookie salary cap based on the wage scale with the collective bargaining agreement. Yeah. We're going to get the same exact player at six, and then we're going to turn around and we're going to, you know, have the opportunity to have a three next year courtesy of San Francisco and a one the year after that. So it tells me they kind of know who they want, and it's just how much can we manipulate the board and be able to pick up extra stuff while still getting that same guy.
Excellent.
Smart. I like it. I like the strategy, and I like, they were never taking a quarterback at three. They were selling three the whole, they're planning on that the whole time. Were they not?
Correct. So the reports that have come out in the aftermath was the only quarterback move they would have given any serious consideration to, and they would have given very serious consideration to, would have been Deshaun Watson had the off the field news and developments before, not developed the way that they had. Yeah.
Okay.
So Tua is the guy moving forward for 2021 for sure.
All right.
That's unfortunate how that's played out too. That whole Deshaun Watson story. I wonder if we'll ever see him in the uniform again. Not good news for him. Let's talk about what did Miami get out of all those trades? I mean, they moved up and down and up, and rumor has it they may have picked up a couple of nice picks along the way as well. They acquired positive net value overall, didn't they?
Yeah, so moving down three spots, they ended up pulling it was a pick swap this year, so they actually moved back from the fourth to the fifth round this year, courtesy of the swap. But they netted San Francisco's compensatory pick in 2022, which they got courtesy of the Robert Saleh hiring. And then they got San Francisco's first round pick in 2023. But they also, and this is kind of the under the radar bit for this whole thing, is the pick that they traded to Philadelphia to come back up was their own. And they chose to keep San Francisco's pick. So it's an interesting bet from the Dolphins' perspective that the 2021 season going into the 2022 draft, we're betting we're going to be a better team than San Francisco. Now, whether or not that materializes is pretty bold. I guess you look at the landscape of the NFC West, and that's a tough division, and you know, you get bit with a couple injuries, and Miami finished second in the AFC East in 2020. So, but they're definitely betting on themselves with the trade back up to six, and the fact that they sent their own pick to Philadelphia, and they said, we're going to keep the San Francisco pick. We think that's more valuable.
You know, as a team who's watched, has been through GMs at a pretty good clip over the years, I think that at this point, you know, you bet on yourself, because if you're not doing well by that point, you may well be looking for something else anyway, right? So you just kind of go all in on yourself, and either you're right or you're not, and you collect that last year of your contract while you're sitting on the beach somewhere. All right.
Sitting on a beach earning 20%.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the draft this year. Riz, how you want to do this? You want to break down, like, maybe go through the first seven picks and let Kyle kind of talk us through what his thinking is how this thing may unfold?
Yeah, I mean, I think we know the first two. That's pretty obviously Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson. So three, is it really Mac Jones? Tell me it's not Mac Jones.
There's a possibility that it is, but at the same time, this is that window of this draft cycle and news cycle where you see people get pushed, like overcompensating, trying to generate a story or a narrative or somebody having ulterior motives, anything.
Yeah, we were just talking about Ben Albright too.
It's out there for a reason. Somebody wants you to hear it and talk about it. So my gut instinct tells me that Kyle Shanahan would not give up the assets that they gave to get a quarterback with the physical profile and the guy who's not really going to beat you with his legs at all. I look at, you know, we're talking about Miami, the transition that Tua Tagovailoa had from Alabama to the NFL. and this is a genuine question, other than arm strength, what physical trait does Mac Jones have that's better than Tua Tagovailoa? I mean, he's taller, but, and even arm strength,
I would say Tua has a stronger arm, and strong arm is not amongst Tua's best assets.
Correct. So yeah. You look at it from that perspective, and it's like, okay, we're giving up the farm to go up and give a guy who you literally just saw, somebody from the same system who had better physical skills to work with aside of being shorter, struggle in his first year in the NFL. And I think you watch that Alabama offense, and Steve Sarkisian coached circles around everybody last year. Yeah. It was from play design to where they're putting receivers in the read progressions and finding mismatches and exploiting weaknesses. It was a clinic. So yeah, I'm very skeptical of Mac Jones being their guy
here. Let me ask you, beyond this, beyond, you know, the smoke, whether it's a smoke screen or Laramie Tunsil style, is where do you rank Mac Jones? Without all the other noise, without all the other stuff, where do you rank him? If you were just to go overall, where do you think this guy should get picked in the draft?
He's my fifth rated quarterback personally. And he's quite close to, he's closer to Kellen Mond than he is to Trey Lance.
Yeah.
For me, okay. Personally. Yeah. That's 4, 5, and 6 for me.
Yeah. Right. I see him as like the value of his pick somewhere between 25 and 35, somewhere in that range. I just don't see. And this talk of him going so high is just stunning to me. And that's where, like I said, I refer to the Laramie Tunsil smoke. I just don't see any GM lasting that takes Mac Jones that early in the draft. I just don't see that happening. So if it's not Mac, yeah. Who do you see getting grabbed up there?
I know they have a previous relationship with Justin Fields, courtesy of a quarterback summit that the Shanahans have been a part of, that Justin Fields took part with. And for me, Justin Fields is my second rated quarterback. I prefer him to Zach Wilson. Mm-hmm. I know that he's kind of been the hot button prospect to debate as far as the Ohio State offense and how he operated that. And but the physical skill set that he has is tremendous. And I think he gets a bit of a bum rap as far as what the Ohio State offense does and how long some of those plays can just naturally take to develop in general. And his worst game, the Northwestern game, he was out without his best receiver, Chris Olave, due to COVID issues. So if it were me and San Francisco picking at 3, Zach Wilson would be the pick, and it would not be particularly close.
Okay. That's good to know. I'm with you on Fields, by the way. And just so people know, Kyle is not an Ohio State guy. He is a Penn State guy.
Penn State graduate. Yep.
Yes. So he's not coming at it from a pro Buckeye stance whatsoever.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about that offense carrying Justin versus Justin carrying that offense. It's good to hear someone talk to the other side of that.
I really don't see it that way. So, 4. What do we got at 4?
Well, I know that Chris Mortensen's been really heavy on this being a trade-out spot, or Atlanta potentially staying and drafting Trey Lance themselves. And you would have to think, if the board breaks that way, you got a brand new head coach, you get a brand new decision maker in the building, you have talent on offense, regardless on whether or not you're Arthur Smith and you think Matt Ryan has 2+ years worth of quality play at the quarterback position. Matt Ryan, I'm sorry, he's not an ideal fit for your style of play. You know, you think about what they did with Ryan Tannehill and how good of a quarterback Ryan Tannehill is when you allow him to be a little bit of an athlete, the play action passing and move around a little bit.
Let him throw on the move. Let him threaten with his legs. Matt Ryan can't do any of that. Yeah.
So for me, I look at that and it's, if Trey Lance is there, I understand you're not going to get a good return on investment in year one because you still have Matt Ryan, and you, from a salary cap perspective with the restructure that they gave him, you're not going to move off of Matt Ryan this year. But Trey Lance, this is a home run pick from, you're ideally not going to be in this position again anytime in the near future. If your coaching hire goes off and your GM hire goes off the way that you think it will, you're not going to be in a position to draft somebody with those kinds of physical tools, and you have the luxury of not being rushed to play him right away. So it's kind of a perfect storm for me that makes me really get behind the idea of whether it's Atlanta or somebody trading up if they get a Godfather offer, this being the Trey Lance spot.
I buy that too.
Fair enough.
So then you got four quarterbacks right away. That's
unprecedented.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, people talk about how important it is, but no one talks about four quarterbacks going off the top of the draft. And that's pretty interesting. That does, though, open up the rest of the picks starting at five with a whole lot of options for folks, because you thought a lot of guys were going to go and the quarterbacks were going to get broken up. So what are you looking at number five here? What do you see happening?
My anticipation is that this will end up being Penei Sewell. The Ja'Marr Chase train is real hot and heavy right now because of the connection with Joe Burrow. And I think that's really the only player that could possibly pull Cincinnati off of drafting Penei Sewell. But, you know, Sewell showed up at 3:30 at the Oregon Pro Day and had really good testing numbers. He showed he still has the athleticism, and he's inexperienced. I believe he's played, you know, like 1,500 snaps, and that's it at the University of Oregon. And he was 19 years old in 2019 as a true sophomore playing. He's only going to get better. And Riley Reiff and Jonah Williams are not stopping me from drafting the best available offensive lineman, because you can move Jonah Williams around if you need to. I'm not hitching my wagon to Riley Reiff. How many times do you see that a team with a bad offensive line signs one 30-plus year offensive lineman on free agency and says, hey, we addressed the offensive line, we're good to go, and that guy gets hurt in the first month of the season, and lo and behold, now your offensive line is right back to square one.
Yeah, Riley Reiff. Flashbacks of
TJ Lang.
And Josh Sitton with the Dolphins a couple years ago. It was the same thing.
You would know that well. Yeah. That's so I'm with you on that. I do think it will wind up being Sewell as well. So let's talk about the offensive tackle real quick before we go on to number six.
Sure.
I know you're a big believer in Sewell. What about Rashawn Slater? Do you think he's worthy of being in that conversation there? Elijah Vera Tucker, you know, I like him a lot. Mm-hmm. Is he somebody that's worthy of being up in that conversation as well? And is this looks like a fantastic offensive tackle class. Is it something where you could possibly wait if you're Cincinnati and maybe get a guy like Spencer Brown a little bit later, or Cosme, who I'm not a big fan of, but I know he tested well. Somebody like that, if they want to go on Chase, and do you think that, because I think you can get, this is a weird year for offensive line, where you can get deeper guys who can come in right away and play. Do you think they consider that or what's going on with that?
Yeah. So I know that that's quite the popular phrasing and ideology right now for the wide receiver position, right? Is, oh, you see all these day two wide receivers, they come in, they contribute right away. But this is a very rare offensive line class, not just at offensive tackle, but I think on the interior as well. I think there's a lot of really likable players on day two and getting into the early day three range. So I think that that door swings both ways as far as you can make the case for let's wait on the wide receiver and get one on day two, because there's a high precedent of that paying off quite early. And Cincinnati got some bright flashes from T. Higgins just this past year.
They did.
As a day two selection there. But for me, I think if you're going to draft Sewell, you're betting on the upside and you're betting on what he can become versus what he is right now. Because I'd say Rashawn Slater right now is a more polished football player than Penei Sewell is. But Penei Sewell, at his size and stature, what makes him so exciting and has so many people, you know, wanting to project him into being one of the best players in this class is he got by almost exclusively on athleticism for the first half of the 2019 season. He was just a better athlete than everybody else. And it's like, okay, what's it going to look like once he starts understanding the feed economy and the strike timing and consistency with your hand placement? And
he's got some just lawnmower blocks up there.
Yes.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
Watching him get up on the second level or getting outside the numbers on screen game to the outside, which Oregon did a ton of with Justin Herbert, was there in 2019.
They did.
And just railroads dudes. It's a blast to watch him play.
And so we all agree that the draft is deep on offensive line. Duke Tobin himself saying this, right, that there's guys available second and third round that they have starter grades on. Is this smoke? Or, I mean, are you locked in on the Penei Sewell pick?
I would anticipate this as a Penei Sewell selection here at five.
There you go. All right.
But I would also say Cincinnati should not just say, hey, we drafted one guy, we're good. Like, I mean, sure, your offensive line was brutal, like abysmally bad. So good, yeah. Duke Tobin, I'm glad you got guys on day two that you view as starters, because you should draft one of those and play them on the inside too. Like, you need all the help you can get.
Yeah, they really do.
Excellent. And if Penei isn't their guy, just who would you think would be the guy they took instead, just to kind of put a little bit of extra?
It's got to be Chase, right?
I think so. Yeah. I think that the connection there, and obviously with AJ Green leaving and signing in Arizona, and you know that same style of play. And I know Ja'Marr Chase isn't that stature, but he plays that same brand of football as far as really aggressive, really physical. And he really helped himself with his pro day testing as well, running in the 4.3s. And even if you juice that number for pro days, right? It's like, okay, go ahead and add a tenth of a second because he ran it at the pro day. He still ran sub 4.5. And I know a lot of people that thought he was going to run right around 4.5 flat. So he did great for himself.
It feels like
he'd be there at Cincinnati.
It feels like the Tobin quote is just as much getting the Chase folks ramped up to maybe trade up to take him. And get some juice out of that pick.
I would not give Duke Tobin or the Bengals organization that much credit.
That's a great point.
Never know.
That's a great point.
All right. Maybe a new leaf is turning over. Who knows?
All right. Let's take a look at the Miami pick now. Here we are sitting at number six. We've got an absolute expert who's never been wrong about Miami, especially in the first round. What do we got here, Kyle?
Okay.
No pressure.
I think if Kyle Pitts is there, I think the pick would be Kyle Pitts. I think you can look at it from a number of different angles for the Dolphins. Chris Greer has not shied away from in the past. 2020 was a little bit of a tendency breaker. You knew they were going to get quarterback and offensive tackle early in the draft coming in. But they've been a team that has, under Chris Greer, kind of gravitated towards best player available. You think about when Laremy Tunsil fell in the draft in 2016. You think about Minka Fitzpatrick in 2018 when he fell. That to me would be a best player available fit. The Dolphins desperately need playmakers, guys capable of creating explosive plays. So great, you sign Will Fuller, you need like two more guys. So you know that this number six pick is going to be a premier spot to add one of those guys. And the Dolphins were really productive, like grossly more productive in 12 personnel than they were in 11 personnel. And some of that's a testament to the lack of depth that they had in the wide receiver room. But both Ryan Fitzpatrick and Tua Tagovailoa alike saw a significant bump in their passer efficiencies when there were multiple tight ends on the field. And then you look at the profile of Mike Gesicki. He spent 65% of his snaps last year just lined up in the slot. So he's slot wide receiver. Is effectively, he's just a big slot.
Yeah.
And then you look at Kyle Pitts, 60% of his snaps this past year at the University of Florida, hand in the dirt. Now, I think you can move both of those guys around, but you can simultaneously come out in ace formation with a tight end on either side of the field and run downhill at teams, or you can come out with those two guys still on the field and run empty and go five wide. So that mismatch opportunity, I think, is something the Dolphins would really appreciate, because they talk about being multiple in everything that they do.
Oh, I know that word. Let me ask you.
Yes, we do.
we got scarred by that one from our former coach. There's a lot of talk, and there has been some talk, and this may be uninformed talk because we don't spend as much time with Miami as maybe you do, but that Tua hasn't done a lot of hasn't had the confidence maybe to do the downfield throws. It's been a lot of really short passes out of him, and the jury's maybe out. Some people maybe are coming to an early verdict on him. A guy like Pitts is probably an ideal fit if Tua is the guy that they want to give this year to really develop and show what he has. Do you think that's part of the conversation here? And what do you think the future holds for Tua? And what's Miami's thinking on him and his role on the team?
Well, they have been very clear to communicate confidence in what he can continue to develop into as a quarterback. But I thought it was interesting. You listen to Tua Tagovailoa during the course of the season, and he's sitting on the press conferences post-game and during the week and all that kind of stuff, and then the exit interviews at the end of the season. And Tua Tagovailoa would be the first person to tell you he didn't execute the reads at times. He didn't read the field particularly well at times. and he didn't do a lot of the pre-snap stuff to eliminate route combinations and understand where he was supposed to go with the football. So there's a lot of preparation and the mental side of the game that Tua Tagovailoa needs to spend a lot of time working on this offseason, and the Dolphins seem intent to allow him to do that. They obviously believed in him enough to make him the number five overall pick. He wasn't as bad as like the national narrative is, which is just looking at it from an overhead perspective and saying, oh, well, he got benched twice for Ryan Fitzpatrick. He must stink. Well, not necessarily. And there were games in which Chan Gailey opened up the playbook a little bit from a no huddle perspective and tempo perspective. You saw that in the second half of the Cincinnati game. You saw that in the second half of the Kansas City game after they gave up 24 points in like 5 minutes of game clock, and they went from like a 10-point lead to losing by two touchdowns in the blink of an eye. And he was able to really play with a rhythm. And I thought it was interesting that you watched Tua early on when he first got installed in the lineup against Arizona Cardinals, Los Angeles Chargers, those teams, and he really played with more confidence and then seemed to shell up a little bit as the season went on. And some of that was, I think, had some injuries in the skill group. And then also they were in the midst of a playoff push, and the whole Dolphins mantra is, you know, win the turnover battle, play smart, don't do anything stupid. So these guys aren't open, and he's like, well, I don't want to turn the ball over because that gets drilled into me all week long. So Ryan Fitzpatrick is showed that kind of reckless flair, and it worked out for them against the Raiders, and it almost worked out for him against the Broncos. But you know, if Tua's psyche in that position was, I don't want to make the back-breaking mistake, then you have to go out and get skill players that are going to really cater to the way he saw the field, which is guys who win earlier in the rep.
Yeah, and it really goes to the point that you made with four quarterbacks going off in the draft early. Number one, we know how important the quarterback is in an offense, but there's a change and a shift that's happening where guys who would get time to develop and season historically aren't getting that as much anymore. It's the requirement is you need to come into the NFL, especially as an early pick quarterback, NFL ready to play. And if you don't, you may not get a shot. Sam Darnold's an interesting kind of getting a second chance in Carolina. Mm-hmm. It's a real neat story going on right now. But the league has definitely changed. And there's a lot of guys who maybe would have made it bubble early if they had to play, but would have made it in the league later with a little bit of seasoning, where it doesn't feel like that's going to happen as much anymore. Would you agree? Do you think that's the risk here for Tua?
Yeah, I think that that's definitely the case. I think some of that is due to it wasn't that long ago when they instilled the change in the collective bargaining agreement that had the rookie wage scale put into place. So financially speaking, this is no longer a backbreaker. If you swing and miss on a quarterback, you can transition, take your lumps with the dead cap in 1 year and be done with that player, as compared to, well, you know, these guys are getting top of market contracts just because they're coming into the league as draft picks. And we're kind of committed to this guy for an extended period of time. And there's also that kind of society in general, everything's like instantaneous, yeah. Right? So, yeah. And that inevitably bleeds into your decision-making and your owners who make decisions on who's in control of personnel and who's your coach and ripple effect coming down to quarterback. So I think there's a couple different layers here, but I would definitely agree that like these, you got like a 2-year window to inspire. Otherwise, like you're on the hot seat right off the jump.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. All right, before we head into the Lions, one last thing I want to do. I want to talk about, for Lions fans, some of the, you know, we've got our quarterback this year in Jared Goff, and some folks have a little bit of pain, anxiety, and sleeplessness, a little insomnia going on. Head on over to cbd.detroitlionspodcast.com. That will help you with all of those symptoms. cbd.detroitlionspodcast.com. There's two brands that we have there. There's the normal CBD, which will help you with all of those maladies. You'll pass your drug tests, all that kind of thing. And then there's their chill line, which you will not pass those tests, but you will plant yourself in a couch for a couple of hours. I just got another one. A guy said his wife lost a couple hours. You people, listen to me. If you're going to get those things, especially the gummies, just eat one the first time and see what it does. Don't go munching on them because 15 minutes later, you didn't feel anything. cbd.detroitlionspodcast.com. Get yourself taken care of, and let's eat responsibly, folks. All right.
Yeah. And if you've got a little one at home like Kyle does, keep them out of the reach of children, please.
Absolutely. Thanks, Kyle, for letting us do that. Really quick. Okay, so let's go into the Detroit Lions, number 7 overall. Historically, a top 10 picker in the NFL draft. Here we are again. What are we looking at number 7?
I think you guys are in an interesting spot. I think depending on if there is a quarterback who falls, whether it's, you know, if there is genuine interest in Mac Jones from the teams that are kind of in the teens and later on, you know, could you guys entertain a trade back scenario? I would love nothing more than following a team, as somebody who follows a team who overly committed to the rebuild process and went out and got all the draft picks under the sun. You guys are set up really well with the Matt Stafford deal. Now, if you could continue to parlay that and really set yourself up for success, especially, and I think this is something that gets slept on a little bit, this draft process is even more unlike any draft process than we have experienced before because of the COVID restrictions, no on-field testing for the NFL combine. It's much more restricted as far as the pro days. So getting future assets that you can invest when things are closer back to the status quo, I think would really position any team that wants to kind of kick the can down the road a little bit to feel more confident in some of their big investment opportunities. So for Detroit, you're picking at 7, you can go best player available, and I would definitely not have any issue with them doing that. But if they could somehow manage to drum up some kind of market, whether it's from even Denver at 9, New England at 15, you look at some of these teams a little bit further back in Chicago and Washington, and the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think, are kind of a sleeper to potentially try to make a splash for a quarterback if they find themselves in that situation, because otherwise they're in quarterback purgatory to no end. Then that would be the ideal scenario, in my opinion, for how Detroit could attack this pick.
Riz, can you imagine the celebration if the Lions were able to get Chicago to trade up for Mac Jones, especially after the laughing stock that you were with the
Trubisky
trade?
Never wear pants again. Never.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, you know, it's funny because we talk about wanting to trade down and get all the picks, but it's always about finding that partner, finding somebody willing. And in this case, especially in the Mac Jones lottery, I'm down on Mac. I mean, he you know, Senior Bowl.
See, I don't hate Mac. I actually rated him a little bit higher than Kyle Wilson. I don't get Kyle Wilson. I really don't. I think that Wilson certainly has a much higher ceiling, but I think you're more likely to get to Jones' ceiling as Kirk Cousins and Brian Hoyer-ish as that might be. I think he's a lot safer to get there. Whereas Wilson could be, he could be Ryan Tannehill. He could be Johnny Manziel, who knows? And that uncertainty scares the crap out of me. So either way, I'm happy trading back from that. I don't want the Lions to take those. If Fields is at 7, take me to the podium. I will be in Cleveland. I will run into that lake and be very happy about that. But let's say in this scenario, he's gone. Real quick, Kyle, do you believe that the NFL is this generally down on Fields as what we're hearing?
No, I don't.
I agree.
I don't know what the motivation is specifically, but this is the disinformation season that has me kind of believing that a lot of what's getting out there now is manipulative towards the process more than anything else.
Okay. Yep. All right. All right, so we're at 7. Let's say Cincinnati took Sewell. So you've got Jamar Chase, you've got Rashawn Slater, you've got Patrick Surtain is still there. Your top pass rushers, be it Kwity Paye or Jalen Phillips, are still there. That's an underappreciated need in Detroit. You've got Devontae Smith is still there. Where would you go if you were making that pick?
So I think the guy who would be most likely to bite off a kneecap or two
right,
would probably be Jamar Chase. Okay. So I know the wide receiver value in the top 10 is not great, but I think from Chase's athletic profile, his style of play, I think, would really mesh with Detroit and understanding lost Marvin Jones, you lost Kenny Galladay. So, like, just pick good football players at this point. Like, I wouldn't pigeonhole myself into anything. And it's an added bonus that Detroit has the need at wide receiver that they do. So I look at his style of play. I look at his talent level. I look at his youth and what he can continue to develop into, and even without having played in 2020, Jamar Chase would probably be my personal favorite for that pick if you got slotted into having to pick at seven and everything else played out the way we talked about.
I think it's tough. I mean, because if they pick a wide receiver, it's going to be everyone screaming, "Hey, you picked for need," right? And it's an obvious, it's an absolute gaping hole.
Right.
The other side of that is you have a quarterback who everyone hasn't bought in on yet. I mean, I know Brad Holmes has because he was with him before.
Clearly, yes.
But there's a lot of people that haven't. And not giving Jared Goff weapons to work with is not giving him a fair evaluation and will likely shorten his career in Detroit. Probably unfairly, but we won't know because he just won't have anybody to throw to right now. What are we talking about? Cephas is our next man up right now, or Terrell Williams, I guess. Just don't have a whole lot there, right?
Rashad Perriman. We got Khalif Raymond, who nobody in Detroit had ever heard of before he signed here.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden he's your starting slot receiver and Danny Amendola replacement.
So it's a huge need, right? But it also seems to make sense, I think. I think wide receiver in the first round makes sense both from a need and an availability perspective, particularly on what we're talking here, Kyle. I even see the opportunity for the Lions to take another. I mean, I want all the defensive players this year, basically. Just give me a line, some safeties, and I know Riz is really banging the table for an off-ball linebacker, but wide receiver is just such a glaring hole. I would actually be very, very happy with a Chase pickup at number seven in this draft. Riz, I mean, yeah. It makes good sense. How about you?
No, I don't have a problem with that at all. Any thought that you would go Jaylen Waddle? Where are you at on Jaylen Waddle? Because I think he's the other real legitimate consideration for Detroit at wide receiver. I see Devontae Smith falling a little bit just because of his size. Whether that's right or wrong, it's real. So where are you at on Waddle?
I personally have Waddle rated as my wide receiver one.
I think he's explosive,
electric. You watch the tape. Like, he's the number two read in the progression in the four games that he played early in the season when he was healthy. And just he still managed to outproduce Devontae Smith over the first four games of the season this year, en route to Devontae Smith winning the Heisman once he got hurt and all that extra production just getting put onto his plate. And, okay, all these manufacturer touches, Devontae, we're just going to give them to you instead of giving them to Jaylen Waddle. But I think his average length of touchdown reception and 17 touchdowns of his career is 44 or 45 yards.
It's 44.75 yards. I saw that today.
And like, you watch the influence that he has. I saw Daniel Jeremiah mentioned that he was the fastest GPS tracked wide receiver in this year's class, and it was, quote, not close. Like, right. The speed that he has and the influence on what that does for so much that's also happening on the field with extra attention. You hear that proverbial take the top off the defense. And like, that gets really cliche at times, but for a guy like Jaylen Waddle, like,
it's real.
You cannot play him with a single high safety in the middle of the field and try and like play contact in the contact. You cannot do it. You have to go split safeties because he will destroy you with speed. And he did it at Alabama. And I think he runs a little bit more diverse route tree than what he gets credit for. And, you know, talking about him and where he's at in the read progression and not having some of the otherworldly production like Devontae Smith has, he was open. Like, he was consistently defeating man coverage just as often as Devontae Smith was. Even though Devontae got more volume, Jaylen still got more production. So for me, like, he's the real deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. And that the punt return. Oh, my God.
See, Kyle's really made himself a friend of mine. I love that. I'm in the same spot. I love me some Waddle. I think he's the guy for the Lions. But I respect your pick. One thing I want to really touch on the question about Devontae Smith before. I know Riz had mentioned, and I have a couple questions about some guys a little bit later in the draft. But really quick, Devontae Smith, the talk about his size, how big a factor is that really? If you're looking at this, is this really the biggest a big enough knock to push him down the wide receiver draft board?
Well, I think that the thing you have to look at is historical context here. And I know people talk about Marvin Harrison or Isaac Bruce or Chad Ochocinco as guys that, but like, Devontae Smith, when he comes into the league, I saw this somewhere across my timeline on social media, he will be the least dense wide receiver in the entire NFL the moment he's drafted. Like, from a height versus weight perspective. And you have to think about, he didn't weigh in at the Senior Bowl so that he could buy time to weigh in at the Alabama Pro Day to get to 170.
That's a great
And chose not to run.
Wow.
Like, you bought yourself 6 extra weeks to get to 170? Like,
I can't fathom a guy being less dense than Paul Richardson. Oh my God.
Yeah.
that guy's calves are the size of my pinky.
And that's assuming that he plays at 170. So you're betting on him being the exception to the rule, which, if you're talking about it like a top 8 pick, like, I'm not interested in doing that. Like, if Devontae Smith is your guy and you love his tape, and like, I really like his tape,
I do too.
Then go ahead and try and trade back to like 11 with the Giants and stay in front of the Philadelphia Eagles. Or if you get the word that the Eagles aren't going to be in on Devontae Smith, then just make sure you're in front of like the New England Patriots or something like that at 15. Yeah. So like, I have a really hard time with buying in on just, there's no context of a player of this stature going this early and having the success that you're expecting him to have based on his production in 2020.
You know, you make such a great point, and it goes, I'm a real bet on yourself kind of guy. If you can do it, you put it out there and you show it, right? And I know, look, there's no need for Trevor Lawrence to show up at the Senior Bowl, right? There's no need at all. But for Devontae Smith to not basically show up and then show up at Pro Day and weigh in but not run, you're not showing that you have what you're supposed to have. Those are two key factors, right? Show me the density, for lack of a better term, and show me the speed with the density. And if you don't, I start to question, right? If you believe in yourself and if you think that you have what it takes to be that guy, and it just looks like you're hiding something. I go back to the kind of corporate world where I come from. And one of the things when you talk about compliance is, it's not just enough to be compliant. You have to do things that don't even look like you're not being compliant. If you do something that gives the air that you're not doing the right thing, then it's a big check, and there's going to be a response and things happen because of that. That's kind of the transfer of what's happening right here. He's doing things that make him look like he's not going to be the guy, or he can't overcome this. We'll call it the density issue today, Kyle. I love that. But this issue, and that makes me really, really question where he should be picked in the draft. He looks like a great player, but I just worry about that durability so much.
Yeah.
And he's not betting on himself.
That's yeah. Yeah.
All right. Riz, you had some guys later in the draft you want to talk about.
So I have two in particular. I want to ask real quick.
Okay. Let me buckle in here. Hold on.
Yeah. No, this cool. is easy. So we're not getting a quarterback in the first round.
Yep.
And you're the Lions. You've got Jared Goff and you've got David Blau. And you've got who the hell else do we sign? We signed somebody else. I'm completely blanking here. I'm sorry. I'm on like 3 hours of sleep. we have another quarterback that's not Chase Daniel. That made me very happy, because Chase Daniel's presence on this team made me physically angry and ill.
I'll get to that while you do this.
So if we're not taking a quarterback this year.
Tim Boyle.
Thank you, Boyle.
Yes, thank you. It's Tim Boyle.
That's the,
yes.
Ask the Miami guy.
Yes. Ask the Miami guy about Detroit's roster. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I'm a draft guy. It's fine.
Yeah, there you go. Would you be interested in taking a guy like a Jamie Newman or a Kellen Mond or a Shane Bouchel in the middle rounds? Or would you just not do that at all and think, hey, we're getting our quarterback with our two first round picks next year? We'll either get away with one or load it together. Would you waste? I don't want to say waste, because that's not the right word. Would you burn a pick this year hoping that it comes into something when you have the opportunity to get a quarterback first next year?
I wouldn't, and the reason why is because I think if you're a quarterback that's worth a grain of salt in this year's class, you're going to go really early. Obviously, we're talking potentially 4 in the first 4 picks, 5 in the first round, and then like your next tier down is Kellen Mond, Davis Mills, Kyle Trask, and then like if you want to take a flyer on Jamie Newman or Felipe Franks, but like Mond, Mills, and Trask feel like they're going to go on day 2, and if I'm Detroit, like, if this isn't the guy who you're going to commit to long term, Why are you going to use a day two pick on a quarterback that's going to be your backup quarterback? Like, that's nonsensical to me. So, like, your best case scenario is a Jamie Newman or a Sam Ellinger or a Felipe Franks. And, like, at that point, it's just, like, it's kind of overkill, right? Like David Blau has had some fun little moments on tape, but, like, you know what he is as a player.
Yeah.
And you know you're not done at quarterback. So, for me, you know, I would be trying to position myself as best as I possibly could to put as much around Jared Goff, and even if that means another day three skill player or something like that, to give an honest evaluation, and maybe you do strike gold, and maybe, you know, getting away from Sean McVay is the best thing that's ever happened to Jared Goff, but you don't know until you try. So that's how I would choose to attack
it. Yeah. Okay. I like that. What do you think about Jamie Newman overall? He looked so intriguing going into the Senior Bowl, and then seeing him, I really missed the weigh-in this year. I love it, that really kicks off a lot of my evaluation, watching how these guys come in. Seeing Jamie, the tape of him on the field, he was just ripped. He came in just looking powerful, athletic. He had that year off. I was really impressed. I thought this guy was someone that may be able to pull something out, and then he was just so inconsistent. It was I didn't know what to think, and I still don't know what to think about this guy.
A little bit of an odd story too, right? Yeah. He's at Wake Forest. He transfers to Georgia. The SEC ends up playing. He ends up kind of opting out anyway without ever having played for the University of Georgia. And they had Stetson Bennett, who looked like Chase Daniel mixed with
Boyle.
David Blau versus Tim Boyle. Like, all of those guys, you put them into a mixer, and the guy that you get out is Stetson Bennett, right? It's like, man, like, you didn't stay and beat this guy out and play and showcase what you can do. Okay. Yeah. But, and then you come to the Senior Bowl, and I didn't think he really showcased a feel for it as far as being a passer, and you assess what the Wake Forest offense was, and they have this really weird mesh point zone read in which he's walking with the back for three steps in the back. It's like, I just don't know what's going to translate here. So he's got the physical toolbox to work with, but for Jamie Newman, like, you wish you would have seen him play at Georgia or put something on tape on something that's a little bit more translatable. Right now, I think you're starting from square one.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I have another player I want to ask about really quick before I give it back to Riz. Cade Johnson from South Dakota State. I know I'm going deep here, but Riz will tell you I have a type.
Kyle knows him.
Riz will tell you I have a type, and I just loved him at Senior Bowl this year. He was a guy that really jumped out at me. Later round, right, I think, but a guy that really has a lot of upside potential. What's your thoughts on Cade?
Yeah, so, I mean, not the biggest or the strongest, right? He's like 5'10", 190 or something like that was his size down at the Senior Bowl, but he was silky smooth, and he put a couple guys in the blender throughout the course of that week as far as running routes and one-on-one. And I understand that's an environment that is skewed significantly towards the offensive players because there's so much space to work with, regardless whether you're a wide receiver or an offensive lineman. You know, it kind of gives you a difficult grasp on what the actual game situation's like, and then you have the competitive balance things in place for the game itself. But you watch the route running ability that he had, and I really had an appreciation for just kind of the savvy that he had to create a little bit of space and defeat man coverage in that environment. So the challenge for Cade Johnson, as far as him maximizing his opportunity at the end of this month, is it's such a deep wide receiver class. Like, somebody's going to get a really good football player. I just don't know when are you going to prioritize Cade Johnson amid all of these really good wide receivers?
And the slot receivers specifically, there's so many good ones this year.
Endless. It's endless.
Yeah.
So that's I guess it's good news for Detroit, right? Because if you say, hey, Cade Johnson's our guy, go ahead and sit on that, draft him in the fifth round and don't look back.
Yeah. I like that. I would love that. I would be a very, very happy player or a very, very happy guy if we got him in the fifth. Right. Riz, who'd you have up on next?
I want to ask, find me a safety that doesn't come on day one who's better than Will Harris and better than CJ Moore, who are currently both starting safeties in Detroit with Tracy Walker.
You want a center fielder type, or you want to come down in the box type?
I would prefer somebody who.
Uh-oh.
I guess we'll never know.
No, he'll be back. He does this to us sometimes. It's his son's making some popcorn in the microwave and it just shuts everything
okay,
down.
Okay.
I don't know if that's really it, but it's fun enough to say. All right, so let's start with a come down in the box guy and then see what Riz says when he comes back.
Yeah, I think Jamar Johnson from Indiana is a name who is a junior, declared early, 6'1", 195, 200 pounds. And he's got a lot of really attractive appeal as far as a guy who can actually do a little bit of everything. You know, I was impressed with his ability to kind of come down, fill the alley, play the run, closer. Tackle. He's somebody who is probably going to be a day two selection, but I think he has a chance to threaten to be a late second round selection. He can play some man-to-man in the slot. So, Jeff, welcome back. We're talking Jamar Johnson, safety from Indiana, as a guy for Detroit.
He may be back only in video alone. Awesome, love that. All right, let's talk center fielder, and we'll see what we can do about getting Jeff so the answers when he comes back.
I think Richard LeCount from Georgia is somebody who is probably, this process has not been kind to him. He got hurt. He had a motorcycle accident during the season. But he has significant experience starting for the University of Georgia. I think he can step into a free safety role. I don't think he's super dynamic. I don't think he's going to have sideline to sideline range. But he has bright flashes on tape. So if you can kind of mitigate the peaks and the valleys and kind of even everything out a little bit, I think Richard LeCount has the potential to be a mid-round steal if you don't ask him to do too much.
Got it. All right, so Jeff, you missed the...
I heard about Johnson.
Okay, you did.
Good.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I could hear you guys. I just couldn't communicate for some reason. And yes, Chris, you were correct. My son was indeed making popcorn.
That's how you know you guys know you've been podcasting together long enough.
Yeah. Wait, yes, very much.
That
so.
Out.
It's not the first time, sadly.
Awesome. Okay, anybody else you wanted to check? I know Kyle, you've been really gracious with your time.
Yeah, we appreciate your time very much, Kyle. Just one other, a late day offensive tackle prospect that you like. I mean, we're talking like day three or undrafted guy. A guy like Alex Taylor went last year in that range. Somebody like that. The Lions have Matt Nelson as the number three right now, the former defensive end at Iowa. And I know offensive line coach Hank Fraley likes him, but I'd also like him to have some competition. So give me somebody like real deep who could come in and be the competitor for that.
Okay. I look at Brandon Jamies from Nebraska.
Thank you. That's my guy.
There you go. Okay. Well, that would be my pick. If we're talking a day three selection, he's another guy that came down to the Senior Bowl. He showed
can play
a little
everywhere.
Something. Yep. He's position versatile. I think he's fairly smooth. He doesn't have any dominating physical traits, but he just kind of gets like leverage and position. So Brandon Jamies, I think, is going to step in for somebody and be a really valuable, if nothing else, a utility offensive lineman that's going to be your sixth offensive lineman that can play all over the place.
Love it. Thank you.
Kyle, really appreciate your generosity with your time, man. This was awesome. Really, really appreciate you coming on, and it was great. Really loved to have you. Would love to have you on again.
For sure.
Might have an opportunity, actually. We can get into that as off the air a little bit, Riz. We'll see if we can get a draft Kyle.
We'll lean on him. We love cool. Kyle.
Yeah.
That was thanks so much for your time, Kyle. We appreciate it, and I'll see you in the chat.
Kyle Krabs, follow him on Twitter at Grinding the Tape. He's the director of scouting for the Draft Network, also lead editor of the Dolphins Wire, and just all around great dude. Check him out, draftnetwork.com. Anywhere you can find him, Grinding the Tape on Twitter, I said. All right, hey, Kyle, thanks so much for joining us, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, take care.
All right. Have a good one, bud. Right.
I like smart people. I like surrounding myself with smart people, and I always feel smarter when I hang out with Kyle.
Yeah.
Great.
Great guy. Really, really great content. Really, really good.
Yeah. He knows his stuff inside out. I know he eats and sleeps NFL draft. He actually, funny story, how we met. He was new to Twitter and sort of new to the game at that time. And he came up to me and I was standing with Eric Galco, who was from Optimum Scouting at the time. He wound up being the scouting director for the XFL. And he came up to us and just like, hey, man, introduce himself. We're like, okay, all right. He gave us a little scouting report. It was on Mike Evans. And like every single thing that he wrote was like, wow, dude, this guy knows what's up. So I got to know Kyle a little bit, and we've become good friends over the years. He is really, really, really smart.
Yeah, he is.
Like all draft analysts, we're going to have our misses. But he is someone, and he doesn't take himself seriously enough that if he misses on someone, he's going to, you know, get super defensive about it. You got to know how to approach Kyle a little bit. He can be a little, you know, you don't want to poke the bear in the eye, but maybe in the shoulder.
You know, you know why I know he's smart? Because he agrees with me on Waddle and on all the way down to Cade.
You found a simpatico man right there.
Yeah. Oh my God. I was just like, holy cow, this is great.
Yeah. Yeah. So okay. that was real good. Yeah. Thanks so much for having Kyle. We have a tentative draft guest for next week. I don't want to jinx it though. So another one. And this is someone who actually worked in the NFL for several years. So if it comes together, great. If not, we will have him in our first show after the draft to wrap up who the Lions took.
How's that sound, guys? You guys like that? Want to say thanks to Loretto Martin for the super chats. Are we talking about speed? Someone told me that speed is everywhere in the future of the NFL is an old, slow pocket quarterback, old men tight ends, and no speedy wide receivers to win the Super Bowl. It's like defense trumps speed.
Yeah, Patricia. It hurts. One of the things that we did get into with Kyle was the Patriot Way South, because that's what they have in Miami. Yep. They and Tennessee got the better of the Patriot Ways, unfortunately.
When he said multiple, it really did.
I didn't think that
was going to happen, but I wouldn't have predicted that reaction. But, holy cow.
And that shows that, in theory, being multiple isn't terrible. But God, you gotta. Enough of that. We're a Brad Holmes, Dan Campbell kneecap team now. I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I am too. It's gonna be fun to watch, at least. That's what we're after. All right, let's not forget about cbd.detroitlionspodcast.com. I forgot to tell you, use coupon code LIONS to get 55% off cbd.detroitlionspodcast.com. The chill line and the super chill will knock you down. Be careful, and you'll fail a drug test with that. Anything that's not the chill line is good for all those pain, anxiety, and insomnia situations. Coupon code LIONS, 55%, cbd.detroitlionspodcast.com. Thank you all for doing that. All right. Next thing I want to talk about, this isn't an Albright thing, and I want folks to understand there's a real difference when I talk about these things, but this was and Riz brought up.
We'll poke at Albright, but no, I love Ben, and he knows that. Mm-hmm. And he knows that if I'm coming at him, it's in good faith.
Well, and Ben knows what he's doing, too.
Yes, he does. Ben is also really, really smart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This was just like, I think something that he, you know, you hit Twitter, you click it out, and you move on, and that's that. But sometimes, you know, Riz had the perfect thing for this, and he told us right before that he came up with it right before the show started. So I didn't get to put it together, but the Captain Obvious thing here. Oh, my God. My watch started talking to me. All right, Chris Burke. And this is just like that, like I said, Captain Obvious take here. The rebuild only succeeds if the Lions nail rounds 2-7 most years, and they know that. It's a big reason why Holmes is here. Does that mean they'll take bigger swings in round one? So
Chris is not a clickbaity guy. That's not his nature at all. But that's not the most poignant statement. That's falling out of a canoe and wonder and. Oh, wow, the water really was wet. Thank you.
Rounds 2-7. If you can nail rounds 2-7 most years, you're going to have a good football team.
Generally speaking, that's a good way to operate your football team. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Especially if you can get like good starters out of, to expand on Chris's thought, because I will give Chris the benefit of the doubt and extrapolate for him a little bit. Getting good starters out of your second, third, fourth round picks, that's where you really build your team, because then you don't have to pay free agents to take those roles. You have cost containment. You can keep those guys, so you don't have to go shopping on the open market once they get there. That's where you really hit. That's why we need guys like Tracy Walker, Will Harris, Amani Oruwariye, Deshaun Hand, to work out and develop and be part of the team going forward. Otherwise, you've got to fix all those holes.
And it's why Quinn traditionally has done so bad in the draft, because he has not hit
All those guys can play to some extent, but you've got to get them. You got to put them in chances where they can succeed too. And I don't think that the last coaching.
But you think about Jelani and Tease and Landis and all these guys that that were
now you're bringing me down.
Right. No. And this is what I'm talking about with Quinn. This is why we now have a bot in the Slack chat about Bob Quinn. Bob Quinn bot.
Smart addition.
Riz, we did the show and we came up with, and we didn't talk about
it. Yeah, we went through pick by pick, didn't we?
Yeah. And we wound up with like a 30% hit rate on his draft picks. And this is why this team
Look at last year. Jason Huntley's gone already.
Yeah.
Logan Stenberg is going to get cut any day now. I mean, you can't do that with these picks when you're trying to build something. You can't miss that badly.
Yeah, that's round three, round four. Cephas is still waiting. See, Huntley's gone. I mean, he's round five.
Jay Sean Cornell. I mean, that's a seventh round. He got hurt. Who knows what's going to happen with him? But I don't think anybody's expecting him to be a contributor.
A world beater. Yeah. So a lot of misses. In many cases, Steve-O in the chat, did Quinn miss or did Patricia not develop him? It was absolutely both. Why not both in that situation? Yeah,
put those hands together.
Yeah. So, like, there was no developing Tease Tabor, for example.
I'm hitting too hard, Chris. Hurt myself.
Jelani, there's not a whole lot of development to do there.
Jelani Tavai can be your fourth off-ball linebacker who plays when you go to a three-linebacker set, which is traditionally now about 27% of your defensive reps have three linebackers on the field, and he will play when there are two tight ends on the field or a fullback and a tight end.
Yeah.
And that's about the only time you will ever see him on the football field.
Yeah. That was just – so yeah, Quinn just missed, and then you add a little pinch of we can't develop our guys, and it gets ugly pretty quick. You get what we have here right now. So we'll see. Yeah. I this is the difference between the staff before and the staff now. With so many former players being on the staff, they've lived it, right? They understand development.
A lot of these guys, you know, guys like Aaron Glenn and Deuce Silly, these are players. Guys who are coming in and joining this team, they watch these guys play. Yeah. They know what they're about. Yeah. I think that familiarity is going to help. You know, it certainly can't hurt. It's certainly worth the try.
Yeah. Oh no, it'll be better than it was, at least from a fun perspective for sure. So, all right, let's go on. The Panthers and the Jets made a move, and this changes up the draft a little bit. Darn it, I wanted to ask Kyle about this.
Sam Darnold. He gave us enough of his time.
Yeah. Sam Darnold. Now, this is one of those things where you have a guy who didn't get a chance, who's getting his second chance. I think well deserved, because I think there's a lot more to Sam Darnold than what the Jets let him.
Number three overall pick in 2018. Up until about 16 hours before that draft, he thought he was going to be the number one pick. And most mock drafts that came out early that morning had him as the number one pick before the Browns let it out that they were going to take Baker Mayfield.
Yep. Sam Darnold is not an untalented guy.
No, he's not. And he's still young. He's 23 years old and already has 3 years of NFL experience. He's had... Breshad Perriman was arguably the most talented wide receiver that he had to work with last year. I know they had some slot guys that can play, but you're looking at a god awful skill position. Frank Gore was their best running back. He's nearly as old as I am. You know, you just can't have, and their offensive line isn't great either. Their first round pick last year was Mekhi Becton. He's monstrous. He had moments. He is not a bust by any stretch, but I don't think he developed as quickly as they would have liked him to. No, that was just a very bad situation. And then he had a psychopath as his head coach. We know how psychopaths can't coach. A selfish narcissist, malignant narcissism for you Rush fans out there. That's Adam Gase. Come on. I mean, if there was a worst coaching situation than Matt Patricia, it was Adam Gase. I mean, that
was that a good
that was pretty darn good. That was I liked it. I liked it a lot. You know, he has an odd Vladimir Putin looking thing to him, and that's just a little scary to me. So he had no chance to succeed in New York, was long and the short of it. He's going to Carolina now. They're an energetic team. They have an energetic young coach in Matt Rhule, who I happen to like a lot, and I hope it works for him. I hope it works with Sam Darnold, too, because I liked him in the draft process. I didn't love him, but I liked him. And I hate that he has been put and painted into where he's at, because he does have to be better. He did not play well. I don't think he prepared as hard as he needed to. Something that Kyle talked about with Tua and the lack of understanding what you needed to do to be a professional. I don't think Sam Darnold ever really picked up on that, quite honestly. I think that's something that Carolina's going to have to sort of instill in him very quickly, or it's not going to work there either. But he certainly has a lot of talent. He can make all the throws. I know that's a cliche, but he really can. I'm hopeful for him that it works out, because he was a guy that just had so much promise and easy sweat. Like there's guys that have swagger to them, like Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
Zach Wilson has obnoxious swagger to him. Mitch Trubisky level, like I'm blowing my signing bonus on Axe body spray level of obnoxiousness. Darnold had it more like I'm trying to think of who's like that. Like it sounds bad now because you say anything about Deshaun Watson, it goes the wrong way. When Deshaun Watson came out, he had an easy, confident swagger to him that people were attracted to. They're like, okay, this guy gets it. You know, he's very easy to relate to, easy to get along with. Obviously, that dynamic has completely changed now. But just going back to when he came out of Clemson and when he first got into Houston, you could see that dudes gravitated towards him naturally. And I think Sam Darnold had that when he was at USC, and it didn't necessarily work in New York for him. I like the idea of also him getting out of New York and going to a lesser intense market where they have media that won't try to trash you from the second that you put the uniform on.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be very beneficial for him.
Yeah, no, he carries his own part of it, but I'm interested to see what he can do. And that's the one thing that we don't see is guys getting the chance to develop in a decent way before they get put on the field. It's the weight of the world on their shoulders.
In a way, it's not dissimilar to what we're hoping for with Jared Goff in Detroit, where it didn't work with his coach. There were signs of early success, but then it went away fairly quickly. The skill position didn't necessarily develop the way they wanted to in Los Angeles, the way that Goff needed them to. And now he's coming to Detroit, and he's got a chance to start over with a coach that believes in him. More importantly, a general manager that believes in him. And
I think knows really, what he needs as far as personnel.
Yeah, I agree. I think Holmes, this has been a big theme, and I've been kind of terse with people on Twitter, and I apologize for that. That's a me issue. That's not a you issue. I'm aware that they're not going to take a quarterback in the top seven. Even if it's Justin Fields, I really don't think they are. I want them to take Justin Fields. After talking with Kyle, I really don't think they're going to get that opportunity. Yeah. But the whole notion of trying to build up around Jared Goff and make Jared Goff the long-term solution, I do believe that Brad Holmes believes that's the best course of action for this team. I know you see it that way too. Yeah. And I will begrudgingly go along with that, with the knowledge that I don't think that's going to work. But goddamn, if it does, I'll be happy.
I want
to. I'll buy a Goff jersey if that works. I would love to see it because he does have the potential. It's there.
Yep.
Didn't see it the last couple of years.
In the meantime, you can get the Goff Land Pipe shirt, the Goff Plumbing shirt. We got that at DetroitLionsPodcast.com/store. It's a good one. A lot of people are picking that up. It's a sweet, sweet shirt. But I want to, on Jared Goff, I want to go to something. The narrative is already shifting. And I need to get in front of this because it bothers me when people are disingenuous and intellectually dishonest.
All right. Okay.
The talk is already started about Holmes bringing in his guy, right? Let me just refresh your memory. Holmes came in and didn't have a quarterback. Holmes came in with a guy who said, I'm not playing here, trade me, in Matthew Stafford. He wound up getting the best available quarterback in the league and a boatload of picks and a steal of value. All, and it just happens to be a guy who he's familiar with from a team before. What quarterback could he have picked up this year better than Jared Goff, Jeff? Can you help me with that?
Maybe Teddy Bridgewater, maybe. There was some thought that the Cowboys really weren't serious about Dak, and I would take Dak over him, but that clearly wasn't.
Yeah, that price tag doesn't just makes it.
Yeah. Ryan Fitzpatrick, maybe?
Oh, yeah, that's maybe? But then what are you telling all the guys you're bringing in?
Exactly. Yeah. I don't fault the move for Goff. I really don't. And in the context that you just laid it out, that absolutely makes sense. and he's going to be better in 2021 than probably all of the rookies, with the possible exception of Lawrence.
Yep.
Just because I think Trevor's that good. He's had those growing pains. I do think that too many people, and I do fall into this, I'll admit my guilt on it, don't remember how good Goff was early in his career. Yeah. Yeah. And all of that credit has gone to Sean McVay. And I don't think that's fair to Goff. But in the same vein, Goff did not play well the last couple of years. He played his way out of McVay's graces, whether McVay's graces were consistent or not. He had to play better and he didn't. And I don't want the future of this franchise bet on a guy who could not live up to I think Sean McVay is a very good coach, who couldn't live up to a good coach's expectations for him.
Yeah.
You give him a shot to prove it. Yes. Do you commit and say, this is our only path that we're going to explore? Hell no. And that's why I'm still advocating for going for a quarterback, either this year or certainly next year. But again, I'm not opposed to giving Jared Goff a chance and build weapons up around him, because you know what? If it doesn't work, you've got weapons for the next guy.
Exactly. That's exactly where I'm at. And you've got the picks next year and the year after for your next guy. I think you're sitting on Goff's contract for this year and next year, and then you're making your move the following year on your quarterback if Goff doesn't work out. I just think, because you're rebuilding anyway and your quarterback's the last piece you kind of put in place, that gives you the opportunity to put all those weapons there, put the defense there,
and if you don't like the draft next year, be it Sam Howell or Slayton, Slovis or Spencer Rattler from Oklahoma, they seem to be the consensus top three. I have not done enough work on any of them to know that, but I just see them out there. If you don't like them, there's going to be some free agents that might possibly come.
Absolutely.
Who knows?
Yep.
You'll have opportunities to replace them in more ways than just the draft and or trades. We've seen quarterbacks get traded. We might see Jimmy Garoppolo get traded soon. Who knows? Could happen on draft weekend.
Yep.
There are ways to acquire.
I don't want Garoppolo over Goff.
No. Oh, no. I would certainly take Jared Goff over Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo might have gotten hurt while we said his name right there. That's how fragile he is.
Tripped over the double P's. Yeah. So just for the just for the folks out there, I just want to make that. When you hear somebody start saying, you know, I'm, you know, skeptical of Holmes because he went out and got his guy and brought his guy. That's not what happened. That's disingenuous as hell. Do not allow that to cloud conversation. Someone says that, just turn and walk away. It's not worth your time. It's absolutely not worth your time. They are not being intellectually honest with you in that conversation.
Yeah.
Gotta say, I agree. Hey, to the folks in the chat, man, this is not your typical YouTube chat. You guys are awesome. Really, really good. It's almost,
I should be watching. I don't have it on today.
It's really good. They've been funny and really good stuff going on. Good core group of guys that are doing stuff. Another great group of guys chatting in the Patreon. If you want to join the Patreon Slack, it's a great place to hang out and have great conversations. Lions and about 15 other channels going on. You can patreon.com/Detroit Lions podcast will get you in there, get access. All you got to do is donate as little as $1 a month. Worth it. Absolutely worth it.
It is. And get well soon, Greg.
And I will let you know, we have our draft show coming up this year. The draft show. We'll have a big mock draft on the 19th of April, it looks like.
Yes.
And then we will have day one and day two of the NFL draft live chatting. And just so you know, if you're in the Patreon on the Lions picks, we're going to have a reaction video of everybody. So if you want to be on that reaction video for the Lions picks, get into that Patreon slide.
Please do.
All right. Yep. With that, I'm going to call it a close, Riz. I think we've had a good week. Kyle really gave us a lot. And
yes, thanks again to Kyle Krabs for joining us and bequeathing upon us a great deal of information.
I love, I was very happy with it. Love a good queath. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at DET Lions Podcast, DET Lions Podcast. Also at Jeff Risden, two of the best follows you're going to find on Twitter. It's the only way to fly pants free. Also give us a call at Skype at Detroit Lions Podcast, all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast, or use the Lions line, 929-33-LIONS. It's 929-335-4667. Sure to go there and get it, leave a message. We'll get you on the air. And be sure to go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com, subscribe to the podcast. What do we like to do, Riz?
So we can come into your ears automatically.
Oh, that's just awesome. Thank you for tuning in. We're going to see you next time on the Detroit Lions podcast. Remember, no pants, no toasters, no hot tubs. No problems, baby, because we're your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection. Thank you all. Love you guys.
final seconds winding down, and look at that. How big is that? Chris and Case out of time. Pack the bags, start the plane. This show is over.
You've had enough of that shit.